Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Glory, your Spurs and Culture podcast. This week, the roller coaster seems to be going back up, kind of. I've got Ash and Tom with me to discuss how much we love Rodrigo Bentancur and how much we hate VAR with every fibre of our beings. Tom, welcome back. It's been a minute. On a scale of one to Amsterdam, how good was that last minute winner on Saturday?
It was so good. I mean, would you take that sort of 3-2 over like a calm 1-0 win? Would you rather that?
I would 100%. I was discussing this with Ollie actually, and like honestly, I will sit through 90 minutes of hell because I do feel like that feeling, there's nothing like it. I mean, provided you actually get that goal right and it's actually allowed, it is in fact the best feeling. And yeah, I think it's probably up there, maybe not quite like Leicester levels, but from last season, but it's pretty good. What do you think, Ash?
Yeah, I'll definitely take the last minute winner over a drier 1-0. I celebrated very hard when that went in, and I just sort of was just sticking it to all the Conte outers in my various Spurs WhatsApp groups, of which there are very many.
I love that so much. I feel like that was like the first thing you put in our group as well. Just like, fuck you, Conte outers.
I said it at 2, which was a bit brave. I went really brave. Early.
Yeah, did I mean, you guys watch it?
Those people are mental, aren't they? Like the Conte outers, yeah. Really. Come on.
I watched it on my dodgy box, which, yeah, I shouldn't say out loud, but.
Well, listen, they don't give us any other options. So.
I know. These 3 p.m.s, it's just difficult.
Mm-hmm. It was quite ghastly, though.
I only saw the Match of the Day highlights, obviously, and was kind of stressfully following it via text and refreshing the app and Twitter. He had to rotate people at some point. I think we've commented before, I certainly have spoke to people, that it's bizarre how little Conte has been rotating, given how many games we've got and how he clearly only trusts, he doesn't trust anyone. He doesn't trust some of the new signings. He doesn't trust everyone, essentially. But yeah, that the kind of team selection in that first half was obviously... a bit weird. And I think a lot of people immediately went, well, Kiefer Moore's going to have a field day here, isn't he? Like, how bad was that first half then, Ash, given that you watched it all?
Really bad. Very, very, very bad. And it's weird because we were talking in our sort of text group like throughout the game, getting like, I get more agitated bizarrely when I'm not at a ground watching it. I get like more annoyed. And it kind of felt like we were never going to score. And then we did score, and it was like, I felt immediately that we would win. It was just like a really weird feeling because the goal came from nowhere. But the first 45 was painful. And yeah, at one point I was kind of worried that like we may like be seeing the last of Conte. It kind of had that sort of end of days feel like. And I think a lot, I don't know, it's like weird. I think back to like the last 2 or 3 years, like even, I know we mentioned Amsterdam at like the top of the podcast, and it's like, even that game, which has like now become infamous, we just started so slowly. Like, and it just never ends. And I'm like, what? There's something wrong with these players that they just continue to start games so slowly all the time. And clearly like Conte's not telling them to just like, you just go out and have a laugh for like half an hour. Like, I don't know what's going on, but they have to sort it out because it's killing us. It really is like, it's a huge, huge, huge problem.
Do you think when a manager makes that decision to rest people, that like it's in their mind that they're going to have to bring the grown-ups on at some point to like rescue it? Or, you know, I guess Conte is hoping that he can rotate that much and we still put in a professional performance, but we couldn't, could we?
I don't even feel like it's the fact that they're like the sort of, they're not even really like the second string, because I think the same exact thing happened the Wednesday before. And I think one of the things I found most maddening, and I don't know if it was like this so much on Saturday, I just assume it was because I didn't get to see much of it except for the Match of the Day highlights. We were out with the kids and Ollie was trying to sort of watch it on his phone, which isn't the greatest way to follow a football game, especially one that's going really badly. But it was just the fact that on Wednesday, at least, they were just all stood still for like a good 45 minutes, right? And that's like the starters, that's the first team. And I'm just like, I don't understand why none of you are running anywhere.
Yeah, there's a real lack of urgency. The biggest problem as well, not the biggest problem, there's so many problems, but they just don't move the ball quick enough. So it just becomes this really lethargic thing of them just like going back home, passing it back around the back. And like, as soon as we did move the ball quickly, like we scored straight away. Like it's like instant. And I'm just like, why, where was that for like the previous like 50 minutes? It is quite odd. And to answer your question, I mean, like some of the grown-ups are already on, like Kane, who's like, I know he's not the captain, but probably the player that other players would look to. He's on the pitch and nothing sticking up front. Son was like anonymous. Højbjerg, who's like, you know, one of the leaders, didn't really like see him for like the first hour. So I don't know, it's slightly weird. And it's like weird that Dyer, you know, I have my issues with Dyer, like came on and like made a huge difference. Obviously Bentancur, who's been probably the player of the season, came on and of course made a huge difference. But yeah, it's not like it was a bunch of like children like out on the pitch. So it's just, yeah, it is. I don't get it. And it's painful to watch our like arch rivals start every game quickly and score like it seems like in the first 5 minutes every game when we can't like really ever get started. It's weird.
I can sort of hand wave it away a little bit, I think. Sorry, Tom. I'll just, because just while this is it's sort of in my mind, because I think I can understand, maybe actually I can sort of understand Wednesday a little bit psychologically, because it had been two really bad games and I can sort of think, oh, maybe it was nerves and you just don't want to get caught, right? And so they actually started playing a lot better on Wednesday once we were 1-0 down, because I almost feel like Conte must have just told them at halftime, this is not a brilliant football team. You're making them look like champions. You're 1-0 down already. You've got nothing to lose. Go out, remember that you can actually play football properly and just pressure them a little bit and they will concede chances. And they conceded so many chances. We had like, it felt like we had about 50 corners. So, and I imagine the same thing happened on Saturday where you just thought, actually, I think we're going to, well, yeah, once we score, once we pressure them, they give up the ball and we can actually win this game. So I sort of psychologically, I guess, in isolation, I get it. But it's just like, but then I do also have that worry that you have, Ash, where it's just like, these are just the same players who have been kind of doing this on and off for years.
We also spoke, didn't we, about how Conte might need to play that the 3-5-2 or the 5-3-2, however you want to do it. But it seemed like that first half at Bournemouth that we like there was just no creativity in midfield, and there's no one joining, like linking with Kane and Son, right? And playing three defensive midfielders at Bournemouth is just kind of depressing as well, right?
Yeah, he had like Skip like playing in like the weirdest position. He was sort of like on the right of the midfield, and he ended up in sort of a lot of the positions that like Kulusevski would end up in. So he was like, and like his crossing was just dreadful. And I think like quite rightly he was, and it's maybe not his fault. I'm sort of not the biggest Skip fan, but it probably is not his fault, but he like got subbed at halftime. And you just think like, I don't know, like the positions that they're playing in were honestly like bizarre. Like there was just no need to like play him in that position and then have like Bissouma and Hoiberg. Like it was just, I was just like, this is unnecessary. Like Bournemouth, like with all due respect, to like, that's like the same team that they came up with essentially, like bar a couple. Like we should just like be able to beat them. And it's frustrating because you get the likes of a Sanchez who like, you know, he's a £40 million defender, and he just like been made to look like really average. And yeah, I just think some of those players now just have to be moved on because we're just seeing the same like mistakes again and again, sadly.
Also, if we're playing three centre mids, what's been great, what's worked when we've done that is just that Rodrigo, but with the Bentancur can get further up the pitch and, you know, can be the creative midfielder. But there's, and Hojbjerg's had brilliant moments this season, but he's not, it doesn't seem to be quite as creative or as calm on the ball as old Rodrigo. He was, I loved that he got the winner on Saturday.
I mean, he got the winner on Wednesday, to be honest. Oh, no, hang on. It was Kane, wasn't it? He got the equaliser on Wednesday, yeah. I mean, I was going to say, let's kind of talk about Rodrigo a bit later, but I was also going to say, so we kind of know what went wrong, and is what went right just as simple as you bring on Rodrigo Bentancur?
Perhaps, yeah. Like, he didn't make such a big difference, and yeah, the tempo just like went up a gear and we started to like really play football. So yeah, he's having an amazing season. He's been the player of the season so far. Like I think you always have to include Kane because he's sort of like what he's doing has become normalized. But yeah, Bentancur is just, it's insane, and we can't seem to play any football without him, which is deeply concerning.
I mean, we always did have that a little bit, I think, back in the day with Poch, one under, you know, like when Dembele suddenly became like the Dembele that we all remember. Like it did get a bit, we can't play properly without him. So we always have had those players where if they are missing, we just kind of go to pieces a little bit. It's just quite surprising how quickly it's happened with Bentancur, isn't it? It's just been like January. That's not even a year. That's absolutely crazy. And he, like, we can't manage without him. And I think I didn't really realise that until this week.
I mean, it also shows the magic of Paratici as well, doesn't it? Because the other player, obviously, who we've been saying we can't manage without is Kulu. Again, like, he's been missed so much in the last week. And I think he was warming up at Bournemouth, right? He wasn't in the squad, but he was out on the pitch having been made to do drills on the Bournemouth pitch, which is pretty amazing. I don't know how many football clubs do that or how often that happens, really.
I love that. I thought it was a bit like, just get out there because the fans like need something to feel good about.
Oh, I mean,
yeah. It's amen.
Great. And it, please, Lord, let him be able to at least be on the bench on Tuesday. But I don't know. But yeah, him and Bentancur were such incredible buys. And I think we were saying recently as well, Bentancur and Hojbjerg are undroppable, or the first names on the team sheet usually. But again, you see why he had to rotate on Saturday, and thank God it all worked out in the end.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully some of those players aren't going to be like too knackered for Tuesday. Ugh, anyway, we'll talk about Tuesday in a minute, I guess, because it's a little bit scary. What about Ash talked to me about my French king, Clément Longley, because it sounded like he was a little bit wobbly, but then was fine.
He started well, and then on the first goal, sort of got rolled, and it all went horribly wrong. But I thought he grew into the game. I thought he did fairly well. He's sort of playing in, like, I don't know if that's an unnatural position for him, but it's definitely a position that, like, I haven't seen him play for Spurs, filling in for Dyer. And I said it in the group, but, like, or maybe it was somewhere else, but just playing alongside, like, Davies and Sanchez just, like, didn't help. They, like, both, like, had very poor games. Even though Davies did, like, pop up with, like, a crucial goal, but they were really poor. Like, Sanchez especially, like, I always sort of try and stick up for Sanchez, and, like, as soon as I do, he just does something absolutely mental, which is, like, waiting for the first goal. I just was just so shocked by it. Just, like, throwing himself when he had no chance of, like, winning the ball, or I don't really know what he was doing. And then the second goal, yeah, sort of seemed unaware that, like, a very tall man was, like, attacking a football in, like, the 6-yard box, just, like, equally bizarre. And then had the audacity to, like, blame Royale.
They were having I only saw the highlights, but they were having a right row after the second goal, weren't they, Royale and Sanchez?
Yeah, on the floor, by the way.
Yeah, they were both sat down, weren't they?
I missed this. Incredible.
It was honestly, like, absurd. Like, Sanchez had made, like, a very, like, lame attempt to get the ball, and, like, had sort of tripped over someone's leg somewhere, and, like, was on the floor, like, pointing and shouting at someone. And it's like, mate, you're the centre back. Like, deal with it. So
please, Lord, yeah. Get him a move in January. Like, come on. I think all three of us have tried to defend Sanchez at different points on the podcast. But as you pointed out, Ash, £40 million. And again, things worked out in the end. But we know teams just target him and Royale on that right-hand side. It's bonkers. And that every time we play anyone, when those two starting, they get targeted so badly. And you, like, teams know how to play against them.
I just have this thing with Sanchez where it's like every time he starts or, like, comes on, it's like watching, like, my child and being like, oh my God, please don't screw up in front of all these people. And it's just not a great way to feel about one of your centre-backs, is it really?
No.
Yeah, but I do also think that said, I do also think we've said this so many times as well, and it's like you can't play. I think just Sanchez at least just doesn't thrive in unfamiliar surroundings. Or so if you put someone who's not Dyer next to him, or if you put like, or there's just too much chaos with him and Emerson together down that right. So I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
I sort of said you can't play them both. And I just feel like it does hang them both out a little bit to dry. And the right wing back situation is now becoming quite weird, isn't it? Like Tom, you were saying, is it now time for us all to become,
I mean, there's this Spence Truther kind of thing on Twitter, isn't there, on Spurs Twitter, where people are really petitioning for Spence to start. And I know journalists have kind of asked Conte a lot about Spence. But on Wednesday night, actually, against Sporting, when Emerson did his no-look pass and passed it out, that was right in front of me in the south stand. And poor Spence was about 2 yards from Royale when that happened, warming up near the southwest corner. And you're like, the poor guy, like Spence must just be thinking, what do I need to do? Why is he being so loyal to Royale? Am I really that bad in training for not to be able to get on the pitch? It's... yeah, it's totally, totally bizarre. And I think all of us kind of tried to allow Royale some breathing room, or tried to give him the benefit of the doubt. But I think we're all over him now, aren't we? For sure.
Well, I think he just, didn't he actually like boot the ball out of the stadium on Saturday?
He did, yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't that also...
How? How have we got another one of these absolute clowns?
He was really... Like, when I heard that had happened, and then when I saw it, he was so close to goal. Like, I'd presumed it was, like, you know, near the halfway line, and he's just booted it, and it's like... But he was in a good position, just booted it out the stadium, right? Over the stand.
Yeah, I don't know how it's possible, but he did it. The right back thing's weird, because I always was like, got angry at Kyle Walker for sort of like lapses of judgment he did. And then he got sold, and then I got given, who is it, like Serge or someone. And I was like, okay, he's an absolute idiot as well. And someone will come in that's better. And then like, you just get Emerson. You're like, how is this happening? It's just like, so maybe Spence shouldn't come in, because maybe it's just all downhill forever. I don't know what will happen, but I actually think we might see Spence against Forest in the cup. That's my like guess of when it might happen.
But you're right.
That makes sense, actually.
Post Kyle Walker, that position has been cursed for us. So maybe
it's mad, isn't it? Because you're right. We did all get quite sort of angry at Walker. I mean, I remember there were always people around me who were just always basically calling him a massive idiot. And I don't, you know, he obviously wasn't. He just did have brain freezes, but he just had the pace to make up for it. That was the thing. And then under Poch, he did become like an exceptional defender as well, I think. And it's just like, we couldn't have foreseen how badly that the post Walker like era would go. So I do, you're right, I do also fear for Spence a little bit. I will say this, I don't think Emerson Royale is as bad as Serge Aurier. I'll die on that hill, and I may have to.
That's a debate. I don't know. It is a weird one, but I do, I want to see Spence, but I also am not willing to die on the Spence hill that people ready to fall and take out. Like, he can't be that good, like, he's more likely to be sort of, I don't know, another Jack Clark than probably, you know, the next Kyle Walker, shall we say. I don't know. We'll see. But hopefully the latter.
On underperforming wingbacks as well, or not underperforming, maybe inconsistent is the word. It was interesting that, I mean, Davis and Sess weren't playing particularly well, but then got the two goals, didn't they? And Sessegnon's goal was really well taken. Was it Højbjerg? It was a Højbjerg ball, right? That was like an absolute beauty of a through ball. How was Sess the rest of the game? Because good on him for getting a goal.
I thought he was, I hate to be really negative, but he was also really bad. And then sort of like popped up with a goal out of nowhere. It was like honestly bizarre. We were like cussing him out, and then it's like, oh, Sessegnon scored. Oh, Davis has scored. just like really mugged us all off. But it was nice for him to score that kind of goal, because like when you see the old like Fulham highlights when he was sort of this like young wonder kid, he used to just like score that goal every week. So I don't know. Maybe going forward, I quite like Sessegnon, but he just, I don't know, like just comes across as a bit of a weakling in like the tackle and like gets mugged off the ball all the time. It's a bit weird.
Well, I'm just going to just move on past that, to be honest, and just say that one of the things I really appreciated about Saturday was how bad it was for loads of people's narratives. So as you pointed out, Ash, it was quite bad for the sort of anti-Seth and anti-GB narrative. It was also terrible for the Conte out narrative, I think. Which had been, understandably or not, I don't know. But it had been like gathering pace quite frighteningly. And one of the things, like Saturday in particular, was such a like roller, like that was a real roller coaster of emotions, because I think at halftime I was so furious. I was furious at the team, and I was just furious with like life itself for just proving. I just so didn't want it to be true that our football is unsustainable and the wheels were going to come off and it was all just going to go to pieces like it did under Jose. I didn't want that to be true. And I didn't want anyone who's been saying it to be right. And, you know, and you can just feel it all just kind of closing in on you. so I was just, so the joy of the last minute win was, I think, just made like, that just made it a million times better for me.
We like that. That first half was terrible, and we shouldn't be going 2-0 down to Bournemouth, even away to Bournemouth. But what's been frustrating me about it before Bournemouth earlier in the week is I've got neutral fans, not even Arsenal fans, but neutral mates saying, "Oh, your fans want Conte out," and I'm like, "We're third in the league. Like, it we can't want Conte out. We're a ridiculous club. Like, and it just makes us look." So totally silly to want Conte out when we're third in the league, doesn't it?
And top of our Champions League group, like despite like what happened like in the previous like couple of games, like we're in really genuinely like we're in really good shape. Like going into like if we like especially if we get a result in the next two like Premier League games, like we're in all competitions still. We're like approaching the like halfway point of the season, and like we haven't really got started. Like you haven't seen like Son at all, really, like aside from like maybe like one or two games. Like Kane's got his goals, but like Kulusevski's been like obviously like injured. Like things probably will only get better. So I think let's just give him like time. Like he got us fourth. He's only been here a year and he's like had to deal with like some horrendous players and some like really shit situations. So I think it's absolutely insane to like want him out. And I don't know, like we've had like a couple of years of, you know, since the end of POC, the football hasn't really been good. And I just think at some point we've got to stick with a manager. Like Arteta got pelters and for a while and everyone was like, trust the process. And now they're annoyingly winning like 5-0 and going top of the league. So let's just give him time and let's get him better players. Like he made all the right subs, I think, at the weekend and like changed the game. Everyone was like, he needs to change it early. He did. He changed the formation. It worked. So I'm sort of fully like in the Conte camp for sure for the time being.
Yeah. And I've got to say, I absolutely loved the second half on Wednesday night. Like I had a genuinely great time. It was the first time I've been back to football with my dad since before COVID. And I really just wanted to see a Champions League game because who knows if we will still be in it after Tuesday. And as bad as the first half was, I just loved the second half. I just thought we really, really went for it and fully, fully deserved what should have been a win. And we were just like fucking brutally, brutally robbed of it. And honestly, I just like VAR has to go, right? That we were celebrating that goal for like a good 5 minutes or like, well, we all celebrated it wildly as you should, because you think you've won the game. And then we had to wait for 5 minutes while they essentially like, I'm sorry, I know this makes me sound a bit tinfoil and a bit the Arsenal, but they were looking for a reason to rule it out. I swear to God they were, because you can't tell me that is like a clear and obvious mistake if you're looking for it for 5 minutes.
The whole thing was insane. Like generally Wednesday was, it was a strange game, wasn't it? Because like you said, the first half was some of the worst I've seen us play in ages. And to be fair to them, I thought Sporting had a really good first half. Marcus Edwards was always going to score against us, wasn't he? Let's be honest. He was really good and he was just walking through our midfield and our defenders. It was ridiculous. We played so badly. I was furious at half time. And then that second half, we were absolutely brilliant. Their keeper, Sporting's keeper, had the half of his life. He was so good. We had so many chances. And we should have kind of won it earlier in that half, really. But yeah, the VAR thing. I was in the South Stand. The South Stand went absolutely mental. When we scored the last second winner. And then I just think, what is the point of football if the match going experience, I paid 65 quid to be there. Like I think most people have paid some stupid amount of money to be there, 50 quid plus to be in the ground. And what's the point in VAR, if it kills the experience for people actually at the match? Like 4.5 minutes we stood there waiting while, like you said, Rosa, the officials tried to find a reason to rule the goal out. There was no clear and obvious error there at all. It was a goal. It should have stood. And yeah, I don't ever get too tinfoil hat. I don't moan about refs, although the ref did have a pretty bad game generally against in that Sporting game. But 4.5 minutes for them to decide it. Surely at some point someone needs to turn around and go, if it takes that long, like, how can it be a clear and obvious error? What an awful experience for fans. You celebrate, you're fucking over the moon, you've won the match, you've qualified for the Champions League with the last kick of the game, and then you stand there for 4.5 minutes going, well, they're going to rule it out. Oh, I'm furious about it still. And, you know, Conte, great that he got his red card. Like, he was right to go mad.
He was, completely, and I don't think anyone can blame him at all, because it was that feeling, wasn't it? And I feel like, as well, already we wait for a minute, don't we? Like, VAR has ruined it enough that even when you're there, there's always that, like, brief moment where you go, can I celebrate this? And then you go, okay, fine, we're going to celebrate it. And then you go absolutely crazy. And then you just know the longer it goes on, the more you're like, this isn't going to happen for us. And it's just that most basic feeling, isn't it? We have absolutely been robbed. And I just don't, to send Conte off as well, I'm like you, Tom, I just never want to get into the whole like ref situation. But like, he was apparently like smirking at the players and being just generally like a bit of a prima donna and just seeming to, I don't know, I am sounding a bit tinfoil now, actually. But just seeming to kind of relish it a little bit. And I just think that's actually a massive, more than anything else, more than for what it means for us in the Champions League group or whatever, just you've robbed us, all of those people, over 60,000 people in that stadium, of that moment of just pure joy, which is the only reason we go to football. Like, that's what we're there for. And you took it from us.
I also, a while back, I read something about the popularity of football or soccer in the US, right? And it was only a brief line, but it said how football is like, it is lower scoring compared to the other sports that they love in America, basketball, American football, baseball. Like, you know, most games you're getting a few goals if you're lucky, two or three goals. Like, and yet we've invented a way so that there are less, I mean, we get more penalties, but VAR means there are less goals. And I honestly think it's killing the sport, and it's killing the sport for fans who go to games. And then what is the point? Like, no one, as we saw during COVID, watching football, where, like, football was playing empty stadiums, is fucking awful. So, you know, what, we're already paying a fortune to go to these games. You're giving us less joy. Like, and yeah, I saw the thing as well, so people saying, well, we'd probably be laughing if it was another club, and we would, but it happens to every club. It's indiscriminate. Yeah. Every club gets these awful decisions go against them.
I think part of it, like you touched upon, is that it's geared towards TV. And it's really, the frustrating thing for me is, like, and if you go to games, you'll know this, that the VAR thing happens, but there's no visual. So you're just sort of stood around like an idiot, like waiting for something to happen, which you can't see. You're getting annoyed because there's no communication. And I think if there was better communication, you'd almost be less angry about the decision. And I also think there should be a time limit on how long it should take. I think if, like, it takes X amount of time to make a decision, then it should be awarded to the attacker, because ultimately, like, you're stood around waiting. We're dealing with, like, the Newcastle game the other day, where the ball was barely in play. I think the ball was in play for something like 53 minutes in the Newcastle game. And all these small things are just, like, ruining the experience of going to matches, where, like, people are coming to, you know, the bigger teams, and they're just sort of time wasting from, like, the very first minute. And yeah, it ruins it. And, like, to make working, not all working class people, but working class, middle class people pay an extortionate amount to have the experience ruined by like time wasting and VAR, it kind of just takes the shine off going to these games.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, especially now as well, where, you know, more than ever for all of us, like literally every penny that we have counts, to be honest. And it's just that the other thing is, especially there's something about like goals getting ruled out after all of that deliberation for offside. And when they brought in offside, it was just to stop goal hanging. That's it, right? And then, so it's not meant to be this like weird thing of you can't have a fucking toe offside. And you're meant to give the, my understanding is you're meant to give the attacker the benefit of the doubt as well. So it's just, what is this all for? Why? And honestly, we've got to the point as well where like, not everybody hates it. And you can say, yes, if it went for your team, you'd love it. Sure. If it goes for against a team you hate, you'd be laughing, of course. But as a rule, literally everyone hates it. Like fans hate it. Players hate it. Pundits hate it. Like who is in favor of this anymore? And you always get these dweebs writing articles about it the next day being like, oh, technically it was correct. I'm like, I don't care. Like football's not played by robots.
I think, Ash, what you touched on as well is that you feel like a mug when you're in the stadium and you're having to look at your phone and get texts or look at Twitter to find out if it's offside. Like there's nothing being shown on the screens and you're just staring at the pitch and the referee like has just got his fucking hand to his ear or whatever. You feel like an idiot. Like why we it should be about the fans in the stadium. We've paid a ton of money to be there anyway.
And not just that, though, because you're right as well. It is that we are the last people to be considered in any situation when we should be the first. And again, how has it already been forgotten? Like you brought up the empty stadiums in COVID. Everybody hated that. We've just gone back to the way it was before and everyone's just pretended that didn't matter. Fans don't matter. It's just maximum kind of telly interest is the most important thing. The most important thing, though, is that we are still alive in our Champions League group. Right, guys? How are we feeling about Tuesday? Ash, have you got good vibes, bad vibes, just hope, whatever?
Hopeful vibes, but it really sounds bizarre, but I find it really difficult to get excited about the Champions League group stage like at all. I haven't really watched much of any of the games aside from the one I went to. And so I only really, maybe this makes me sound spoiled, but I only really engage like once we like make it to the last 16, if we make it to the last 16, but I feel like we're going to do it. Like I'm hoping that Saturday was the kick up the ass that the players needed. And I think Conte sort of being banned will hopefully create like a bit of a vibe for us to go there and win.
That's a lot of Champions League football you've missed out on if you don't really care about the group stages.
I kind of delve in and out. Depends on the game, but yeah.
No, fair enough. I want to get through it. I don't care what happens after that. I just don't want to be back in Europa. Like, as I've always said, that makes me so entitled. I want them to go into that game with like a massive chip on their shoulder about what's happened. That's sort of just to be up for it. Like, I feel like we never do that. We never do that proper siege mentality stuff. The world's against us and we're going to fight and we're going to win. And I really want that. Can we do it, Tom?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we really need that. We need to carry the anger from the sporting game into this game. Obviously away from home at a ground, I think. So is their main stand is like closed? Is that like punishment or is it being rebuilt or something? I think one of Marseille's stands, their sort of cop is closed. We're taking 2,000 fans, apparently. I think we could have taken more, but actually people were too worried to apply for this one. So firstly, I hope everyone who goes to that game stays safe because it sounds like it can be a bit hairy in Marseille, and I believe like fans have been told not to walk to the ground. They're being bussed from the port to Marseille Stadium and stuff. So that is obviously a big, that's really important that our fans stay stay safe. And then, yeah, we've got to carry that anger into the game. I'm not feeling confident because our away performances in the Champions League have been dire for a long, long, long time. But if we can like bounce off that goal that should have stood against Sporting, and then we've got, you know, the full first 11 or who the fit first 11 starting, and Rodrigo, Bentancur pulling the strings, then fingers crossed. I think we deserve to go through now in the Champions League. So yeah, I'm not confident. I'll be really worried, but and I think the team will miss Conte on the sidelines as well, right? Will it be his brother and Mace barking orders? I'm sure Rosa will love that.
Surely Ryan Mason will bring a very similar energy to the touchline. I don't actually know who it's going to be, and I feel I'm not really surprised. Like, our fans were not super up for spending loads of money just to possibly be stabbed in Marseille. So it's a bit of a hairy one, isn't it? We just need a draw. Famous last words. And we should be through anyway. Like, we absolutely should be. We should be top of the group. I mean, we're top of the group anyway, but we should be like fully top of the group and through, no worries. So it would be so, so, so unjust. I mean, these things happen. But can we just play from the first minute? And then surely,
agreed,
we could get something.
It's not much to ask to play like the first half of a football game.
You wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
They are meant to be 90 minutes long.
Yeah, simple request. But let's see if we can do it.
What about the following? This is it, actually. I want them to just not even, like, we're going to think about the next game, Liverpool, right now. But I don't want them to be to have that in their heads at all. I just want them to go out there and just be like, this is it. This could be our last game ever. Let's just fucking put everything on the line. But how do we feel about Liverpool? I was watching some of their hilarious loss against Leeds the other day. And honestly, especially like Leeds' first goal, like their defence, like absolutely, it like split their defence with like a perfect ball to run onto. I was like, if Son was actually like properly on form, we could really take advantage of that and actually possibly do something really good against Liverpool. But I have to say, I'm not really confident because our record against Liverpool is just crap, isn't it?
I watched most of that the Liverpool Leeds game, and they're really not that good this season, are they, Liverpool? Really? Obviously, like, Salah can always punish you, and their fullbacks can put in a ball, but they were really bad against Leeds, and they've had some terrible performances all season. I hate Jurgen Klopp so much. I think he's such a fake nice guy. I don't really know, you know, I guess if he's your manager, you love him, but he's such a brat. When he loses, he's like the worst loser, like maybe the worst of all the managers in the league. He's the most petulant prick when Liverpool lose. So I would love to beat them, but yeah, they desperately need a win or a big result against us. It could go either way, but yeah, generally they're just not as good as, like, they're nowhere near as good as they were last season.
Yeah, I can't wait for Klopp to flounce, and I'm quite confident that he will this season, actually, because it just seems like he's sort of hit that point. He's about, what, like 5 seasons in now, something like that, and it's just, they're all burnt out, aren't they, really? And you're right, he's so graceless. And I don't mind being a bad loser, like kind of amongst your people, but don't be a bad loser, you know, in front of everybody. It just makes you look really weird. I hope Romero is back for that one, because it doesn't sound like he's going to be involved on Tuesday, right?
No, I kind of get the vibe. He's sort of just tapped out now. Until the World Cup, that's just the energy that you get from him and most Argentinian players.
Yeah, I was.
Are there any other Argentinians in the league, like, who are going to the World Cup? I was trying to think. It feels like it's just him.
There must be others. I'm not sure.
I was away in Greece, so I missed a lot of stuff. Like, I watched most of the United game, and But I tried to kind of switch off. So I totally missed the like the quotes about Romero. But was is Conte basically suggesting that he's feigning illness to kind of bit stay fit for the World Cup? Conte said something that was a bit...
I think he said something along the lines of that he had muscle fatigue and that the player said he wasn't available. But then he then went and started the Newcastle game, I think. So he kind of came back and then was out for the next one. And I don't know what happened in between, but yeah, we need him because we can't see Sanchez again, because that's just asking for like a disaster. And I think with Liverpool, it's kind of annoyed that they lost the Leeds game, because it kind of feels that, I don't know, Liverpool seem to like raise their game against like the big teams, and they did really well against City. So I expect like it's going to be tight. And I thought the game at our ground last year, we were amazing and we should have beat them. And I think it was like 2-2. So I just feel like we owe them like one, because the past few games we've played really well. So I would love to just like win the last two Premier League games, go into the break in like third and like, yeah, in like striking distance of like the title, which I know is like, feels like a dream the way we're playing, but like, it'd just be amazing to go into the break with that.
I think given the, how competitive it is for top four now, like we're talking just after United, I just watched some of United West Ham, and West Ham should deserve a draw for sure. De Gea saved them at the end of that game. But yeah, United are back. Chelsea are totally inconsistent. But Newcastle have got one game a week now to the end of the season and infinite cash. Like, it would be a huge statement for us to just be in the top four before that World Cup break, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean... Like, we've got to be honest, if they're serious about trying to do anything this season, we've got to win those last two games. But it is sort of, I mean, Liverpool will definitely raise their game against us. And that's kind of always been what they've done. Like, they tend to lose against like really crap opposition. And then like, they've always been more successful. They've been like the most successful out of like the top six in beating the other top six, I think, under Klopp. So yeah, it's not looking that great for us, but it's just like we always say, isn't it? And I know they've let us down so, so, so often, but if they're serious, and this is what makes the Romero stuff so frustrating, but if they want to do something at all this season, like they got to turn up. They just got to turn up. Like, we've got enough to be able to do it the way Liverpool are playing right now. God. They are very, very shaky.
I've said this like a few times, but please, could Kulu be back for Liverpool, please? What's also worrying, that Sunday, it's like Sunday, 4 o'clock, going to meet up early, have a few beers, could be a lovely day. But what's also worrying is the 12 o'clock next Sunday is Chelsea-Arsenal as well, isn't it? So if Arsenal win that and then we don't perform against Liverpool, I'll be so depressed by the end of next Sunday.
I mean, that ridiculous, that like the Chelsea Arsenal game, Ollie calls that the Kumbaya Derby, because it is a proper like, oh, how are you feeling today, guys? Would you like some points? Who needs them? Like, what? And I genuinely feel like every year it's whatever screws us over the most is like the result that happens. So I don't have high hopes for that one. I would just like put that one in the bin already. It's just one of those things, isn't it? We had like a very bad week. We've had a pretty good week. It's just like, who knows? It just could go either way. We could have another great week, or we could have like a terrible week. And it's just, honestly, I wouldn't be confident in making any kind of prediction for anything.
No, you can't. Not with the way that they're playing. It's like they play like one shocking half of football and then concede and then start playing. And I think Conte even alluded to that in his quotes after the game. I think he said something on the lines of the players need to like basically put into practice like what we're doing in training and like play from the first whistle and like stop sort of being scared to attack. So if we actually attack from the minute one, maybe we'll actually win a game easily.
Which, to be honest, we have also done in the past against Liverpool. So I would also not be surprised to see us really, really go for it. He did say something about our players lacking confidence, right? Didn't he? I thought, isn't that kind of your job to make them believe?
Yes.
Again, I'm a Conte believer, but just a bit more from you, Antonio.
Yeah, well, Bournemouth, it was also weird that he was like, oh, I wasn't angry at half-time. I told them he sort of was very gentle with them by the sounds of it at half-time. And just said they needed more confidence. But even though it was terrible, second game in a row that we've just been absolutely awful for an entire first half. Anyway.
Should we move on to a team that was not awful at all?
Yes.
That was very smooth.
And also, Charlie's not here, so no one's making us do predictions for
exactly for
Liverpool or Marseille as well. So
we're just going to say we're worried and we hope for the best.
Skip that bit. Yeah. So to a team that, tell us about the team that are absolutely smashing it or did on Sunday.
Yep, Tottenham Hotspur women. Last week, we were humbled by Man City at home, and I had a rant about how the club needs to spend some money and just actually invest in the squad. And this week, they went out and won 8-0 away at Brighton, who are not doing great and who are now quite close to the bottom of the league, but also aren't mugs. And Hope Howell's the former England manager. Hope Howell is their coach, so she's obviously got a lot of pedigree. So it was, I feel like that was quite a shock result. And I watched the second half and we were already 4-0 up by that time. And it was just honestly one of those games where every time we went forward, we pretty much scored a goal. I don't think their goalkeeper made a single save. And what was lovely was everybody was involved. So we scored really, really early. With a Molly Barchip goal. And then one of the new signings, Nikola Karczewska, got her goal. I don't know if that's her first league, maybe it's her second league goal. But then after that, it was two for Drew Spence, two for Jess Naz, and obviously two for our queen, Ash Neville. So it was just a glorious, glorious day all round. And now I feel a bit silly, basically.
There were some lovely goals as well. Was it an Ash Neville masterclass?
I think it was just all of them, to be honest. She scored two good goals, but I think Jess Naz's goals were probably the best. At least one of them was just a lovely, lovely shot. But also one of them was that classic goal that happens when the other team has gone to pieces, because she pretty much chipped the goalkeeper from almost the halfway line. Which is just one of those things that is just going to happen when the other team's gone to pieces. But I do feel they all played really well. And I think it was just a great sign to kind of give them all more confidence. And again, last week I was complaining about the amount of injuries we had, but I think this week actually two of our injured players came back. So I feel a lot more confident now. Next week is Everton, but we've got them at home, so I feel pretty good about that, to be honest. I think the only thing now is I honestly feel like it's getting more and more ridiculous, and we talk about this all the time, it's more and more ridiculous that Ash Neville has not got one single call up to the England squad. I don't really understand it, and it just makes it all start to look like a weird kind of closed. I think a lot of it is she didn't come through the England setup. She hasn't played for any of the youth squads, and that's where they've taken most of them from. But if you look at the England team, it is just all from the kind of the top four. I think there's one player from Everton, and then Rachel Daly, who just transferred to Villa. So it just makes it look like a real clique, and it doesn't really feel like it's being done on merit. I think, do you know what I mean? We've had some, the England men's side have had some terrible players who've just got like one cap. So come on, man, just give Ash Neville a go. Anyway, I complain about this like basically every other week, so maybe I should let it go. But it is very annoying because she is honestly so brilliant, and we're not, you know, we're not like the best squad around, but I think she is kind of levels above everyone else. So anyway, the most important thing to take away from that, I feel like, is that as ever with any Tottenham team, you say one thing and then the next week they prove you completely wrong. And at least this week I was proved wrong in my negativity rather than the other way around. So thank you for that, Tottenham Hotspur women.
Nice. We've also got Chelsea coming up as well, I see. One of the like 10 times we play Chelsea. The women's
ignore team. It. Pretend it's not happening and then it'll be over. Shall we move on to culture? Tom, have you managed to consume anything, or have you just been swanning around in Greece having a glorious time? That's also fine. You're allowed.
I was swanning around in Greece. When we were away, I consumed the Nathan, what's his name? Nathan Fielder thing. The rehearsal, which was absolutely mental.
You like it? Or because I was like, I can't watch it. I just don't feel like I can watch it. But like, Ash, you're a big fan.
His like weird awkwardness like very funny, but
yeah, I think it even works for you.
Yeah
it was very, very intense. I quite liked the Daisy May Cooper thing that's on iPlayer. Shit.
What's that?
Am I Being Unreasonable? Which is, she's a mum, she's not, it's a very different character to this country, but I quite liked it. It was kind of intriguing. Didn't blow me away. The Arctic Monkeys album, The Car, obviously fairly obsessed with that, like every 38-year-old beardy bloke.
Really? Because hasn't that one had some quite like weird, like mixed reactions, no?
I mean, it's like the last one, Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino, it is basically an Alex Turner solo album. The rest of the band haven't got a huge amount to do. A lot of the songs are very stripped back, and he's in kind of David Bowie, kind of crooner, like Snake Hips, almost like Sinatra mode at times. But the lyrics are brilliant. And there's a really good live show of theirs that was out on YouTube as well that was great. And their Reading performance was great. The album's good, but it, like, you probably need 10 listens and then you're like locked in and the lyrics are brilliant. And then just I'm just like fully ensconced in Irish TV and film currently, because I've been watching Bad Sisters on Apple TV with Sharon Horgan and Anne-Marie Duff, and Bono's daughter, who I really fancy Bono's daughter, and it's made me totally question everything. Do I fancy Bono? I don't even like U2 particularly, but his daughter is gorgeous and a very good actress. Eve Hewson, I think her name is. Anyway, I'm watching that, made me want to move to Ireland. And then I went to see the Banshees of Inisherin, the new Martin McDonagh film, in the cinema.
Amazing. Is it good?
It is weird. So he obviously made In Bruges and Three Billboards Outside.
Classic Tottenham movie, In Bruges, of course.
Great. And great film. And so this film has the same leads, Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell, as In Bruges, but it's weirder. Sort of set in like 1923 in Ireland, and it's very slow and dark, I would say. But I did like it, but it's like way darker and slower than In Bruges and like Three Billboards and what's the other one he did, Seven Psychopaths or something. Ash, did you saw it as well, right?
Yeah, I sort of saw it and had no idea what it was about, like, when I arrived. So I hadn't seen a trailer, like, knew nothing about it. And, like, I left the cinema, like, slightly, like, confused about what had just happened. And then, like, a day later, I was like, I kind of like that film. Like, it was good. But it's so weird and dark. Like, it's very, very, very odd.
The cinematography is amazing. Like, makes you want to move to Ireland. It looks absolutely gorgeous. But yeah, it's really dark. It's basically about their friends, aren't they? Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell are friends who fall out somehow, and then it just gets darker.
Well, they don't fall out. without giving too much away. That's sort of the premise of the film. Like, one of them doesn't want to be friends with the other one anymore. It's just kind of weird. This is weird.
Brendan Gleeson's character wakes up and just doesn't want to be friends with Colin Farrell's character anymore. And then it just gets weirder and darker from there.
But they're such exceptional actors, those two. Like, Brendan Gleeson is obviously just elite. But I love Colin Farrell's, like, the way his career has turned out from, like, the early days when he was going to be, you know, the, like, latest, like, sexy new guy. And then he was obviously like, I'm not really very good at this. I don't really like it. I may be a very good looking man, but I'm actually a bit too weird for this stuff. And just has kind of gone off on his own path, and it works so well for him.
Yeah, I think he, in this film, more than anything else I've seen him in, he clearly doesn't really have an ego. It's not, it's not a sexy role in the slightest, but he's very, very good at it. Also, your man, Barry Keoghan, that young lad,
I love him. He's fantastic.
There's like five people in that entire film, I think, but he is really, really good in it. Holds his own against Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, which is obviously hard. And he's like insanely young, isn't he?
Yeah, he was brilliant in Dunkirk, and then one of like the only good things in the Marvel Eternals movie, had like 5 minutes basically, and was the only one who was kind of compelling to watch, the only one who had sort of any chemistry with any other member of the cast. So I'm so pleased for him as well. He's got a very striking face, I think, as well.
He's really good. And I think you'll like this film as well, Rosa, actually. It's very stagey. Like, I mean, Martin McDonagh made his name as a playwright. I saw
Hangman. Yeah, and I've seen some of his plays as well. They're very bleak.
Did you see Hangman? That was great.
No, I saw, oh God, is it the Beauty Queen of Linan? I don't want to like butcher the name of the place. That is an extremely harrowing watch. Like, brilliant. It's basically like a two-hander, really, but it's pretty bleak.
Yeah, I saw one of his plays called Hangmen that was so good. But the film is very
did
you? Yeah, it was really good, wasn't it? With David Morrissey in it. But yeah, the film is quite like, it could be a play, couldn't it? The Banshees of Inisherin, Ash, for sure. But I think you'll like it, Rosa. It's the cast are brilliant.
I'm excited. I'll just have to wait until that comes to a streaming service near me, since I never, ever get to go to the cinema anymore. Ash, what are you watching, listening to, etc.?
I was listening to this album. I don't know if I recommended this before, but this lady called Izzy Wood, which I like. I know I've spoke to you about, but her album called My Body, Your Choice is amazing. She's sort of famous. She's becoming famous as like a painter and like an artist, and you know, is showing all over the world, but she just made this incredible album, like probably one of like the albums of the year actually. And it's sort of very much in that sort of, how can I put it, it's not too far from like a Saint Vincent, it's like in that kind of vibe, but it's just a really special album. And like, yeah, go and check the videos as well, because they're absolutely mental, as you would expect from her. And then obviously just been watching like House of Dragons, which was amazing and bleak at the same time. And I'm sort of angry about it, because I kind of feel like the series just started and it's over, and it's probably not coming back until like 2024 or 5 at this rate. It's very annoying.
I know, it drives me mad the way these things take so long. I mean, I guess it's a lot of money involved and a lot of time, and the whole series was effectively a prequel to the sort of big action, I guess, because we should probably wait until everyone's seen it. And then we can just have a little bit at the end of one of the pods where we just really get into it, and we can just tell everyone to not listen if they don't want to be spoiled. But I really, like, I think we were all a bit disappointed with the penultimate episode, weren't we? And then the last episode, I think, was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Now we're ready. Now we're doing it.
Yeah. No, like, it ended really well and sets it up so perfectly. And I think you or Billy recommended like the Ringer podcast, which I've like now become obsessed with, like those two ladies who like know everything about everything. It's like
The deep dive is incredible. Like, could you ever have like envisaged yourself listening to a podcast that was like four times as long as the thing you've just watched? But you'll do it. And it just, the time flies, man, because they just know what they're talking about. And it's fascinating.
I don't know where I found the time to listen to it, but I've listened to everyone. It's quite mad.
They're so good. They're good.
Very impressive.
Yeah, I'm really pleased with everything that they've done with this show. And I think kind of making so much of it from the perspective of the central women, there's so much that they've decided that they're just going to really dig into. And the fact that they have these two brilliant actors playing Alison and Rhaenyra, I think is such a gift, really. I think they're just both exceptional and they both carry it so well. So I know that people have found it a bit slow going. I personally haven't, but I definitely am very excited for the next, when we finally get there, but for the, like, whenever the next season like finally arrives, because it's going to get pretty intense. Yeah, that's all I've watched, really. And again, Strictly, Tom, have you caught up with it? Or are you a bit like,
Yeah, Halloween week was good. They're like...
An improvement on the week before, shall we say.
I missed that because I was in Greece, but everyone...
Don't go back and watch it.
Everyone said it was awful.
It was awful.
The kind of BBC-themed dances, 100 years of the BBC. Yeah, you've mentioned it. Anyway, no, Halloween week. I mean, all the dancers are of a really high standard now, I think. No one was terrible, really. And it pains me to say it, but even Tony Adams was quite...
I know, he's improved. I mean, I don't watch his dances as a matter of principle, but it turns out he's actually improved. I mean, it could be one of those things where he goes all the way, which I think, because I slightly... Like Fleur was in the dance off again tonight, and I am now starting to get that sort of is Strictly just actually a bit sexist and racist vibe again, which is a bit depressing, really.
Fleur was really good as well. That dance was great, and the guy from CBeebies has been excellent as well.
Hamza's so good. So I'm gonna just pin our hopes on Ranger Hamza basically, because I think he's the only one who might take it all the way. My culture pick for this week is, South Londoners know about this gem, but other people may not, the Horniman Museum. Tom, I know you love it, but I was there, what day are we on now? Sunday. I was there yesterday. They did a sort of Halloween special fair thing, which was really nice, but it just reminded me of how lovely that museum is. It's got such a kind of eclectic collection, and a butterfly house, and like an aquarium, and all sorts of other crazy stuff. I think when I was a kid and was really obsessed with ancient Egypt, they've got quite a lot of stuff there as well. And like beautiful, big gardens for kids to run around in. If anyone who listens to this is ever in Southeast London, in Forest Hill, I really recommend it. I think it's just such a quality museum. I believe it was actually a Museum of the Year last year. So there you go. Many people agree with me as well.
I love that museum so much. It's an absolute godsend to South London parents. But also, if you've got kids and you live in London, you should also travel, because it's worth, like, it's such a cute, lovely museum. The gardens are gorgeous as well, aren't they? And there's a really cool, did you go in the music gallery?
No, we were just outside that day.
Oh, no.
But they have a music gallery as well. Yeah, there's just so much in there.
There's a massive music gallery. There's a bit where kids can play instruments as well. It's so good for parents especially. I love that place,
and also has like an amazing view, I think. Like, I'd forgotten that as well, and you can just look out across London.
Yeah, it's so good,
glorious. Any more picks from anyone, or are we all good for this week? Okay, guys, it's been a delight. I really, really hope when we meet again on the other side of this week, we have a lot to celebrate. If not, it'll be therapy. And so either way, we just can't lose, right? Tom, do you want to see us home?
Yeah, why not? Up the Spurs!
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.